This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. On this show, Chris Sampson and I are joined by Danny Bisland, Scottish FA Club Services Manager. We talk about what clubs are doing during this period. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast with the Scottish FA's Digital Manager, Michael Bockel, and me, Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland. Michael, how are you in this strange changed time for football and life overall?
I'm actually all good, yeah. Very strange. I think novelty of working from home's wearing off a little bit. But yeah, no, look, it's good to be able to get a podcast recorded, even if we are in separate locations.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, there's kind of far more important things to worry about right now, but we still wanted to come together to try our best at helping clubs across all levels of the game in Scotland. And we've got Danny Bisland from the Scottish FA on today to take us through some of the initiatives going on to keep the clubs engaged with their communities at the current time. Michael, why was this something that we wanted to talk about as kind of our first one back in this time?
Yeah, look, I think when all this kicked off, I think we talked about doing a podcast and just various things in terms of workloads and trying to figure out what exactly is going on. There was a bit of a delay in us getting something, but I think it would be a miss for us not to start recording this new series of podcasts without going into providing some examples and talking about some of the work that clubs are doing due to coronavirus, whether that is what's happening in the community, what they're doing from a content point of view, and obviously that there is more pressing talking points in Scottish football at the moment in time in terms of where money's coming from and what's happening at, with the SPFL and votes and restructuring. But look, that's not what we're here to talk about. We'll touch on a little bit of how clubs are raising funds for sure, but all the other stuff that's going along with that, we'll probably just avoid that for just now.
Yeah, I think we could be here for a day talking about some of that stuff that's going on. But Danny, welcome back to the podcast. One more appearance to go for a hat-trick ball now. How are you feeling about that?
I'm nervous as well. I don't think I've ever had a hat-trick ball, to be perfectly honest. No, thanks so much for having me on today.
Just remind us again of your role and then just fire on with some of the examples that you've spotted.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, it's been strange times, I think, for everybody in the game and local communities as well. So my role is looking after almost the club development side of the football development department. And one of the things that we are very proud of is the work that we do with a whole host of clubs, so member clubs, trust organisations, grassroots clubs, from the very far north of Scotland all the way down to the borders. And there is just an incredible amount of work that's been carried out by clubs over the past 3 or 4 weeks, which have been down to the result of COVID. And I think the clubs have done some things that we've been absolutely amazed by. I think that we've long advocated that Scotland has some of the best community clubs in Europe, and I think the last 4 weeks have certainly demonstrated that in spades. Michael?
I was just going to say, what are the sort of things that you've seen clubs doing?
Well, I think that one of the big pieces of work that we've done over the last couple of years is just talking about the wider value of football. And one of the things that we've always advocated as well is that the football clubs connect communities like, you know, very few organisations would be able to. And they manage to pull together and garner support and reach out to parts of the community that a lot of other organisations just simply wouldn't be able to do. So for me, that connection side of it, you know, whether or not they're speaking to their fans, speaking to players, or speaking to their community, I think are just, just some of those examples. If I look at the community aspect, there's clubs like Aberdeen FC and the Community Trust up there, Spartans Academy, Stenhouse Muir, Cumbernauld Colts. All of them are doing frontline services. You know, they're working in food banks, they're picking up prescriptions, they're reaching out to their wider community and offering services which they normally may not have as a top priority, but certainly they're you know, they understand that their community need them at this stage, so they've decided to go down that route. You know, I think you look at Nairn County got a lot of really positive press very early on in the whole process because they released a statement basically saying, we realise we're a football club, but we represent so much more than that. And that was incredible. And I think that the way that the clubs have stepped up, particularly with that frontline services, has been absolutely tremendous.
You've seen the likes of Jim Goodwin as well, obviously manager of St Mirren. I think I'm pretty sure I've seen a couple of pictures of him going round fans' houses and delivering kind of vital food to them and just spending a bit of time with them as well, obviously at a distance.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's that idea of connection again. You know, I've seen a number of clubs, like I think Dunfermline worked on phoning some of the fans. I know that, you know, the Dave Cormack, you know, has been in the press recently about them contacting their season ticket holders to have a bit of a chat with them, you know. And I don't think that can be underestimated because it can be quite a lonely time for a lot of people. And I think the idea that they're still connected to this much wider society and their communities is so, so important. So, you know, Jim Goodwin, you know, dropping off some a food parcel for a you know, a couple or a person who's maybe a little bit lonely, I think it's going to have, you know, a long-lasting effect. And I think crucially as well, from the club's perspective, the impact that they're having is going to be long-lasting. You know, people are going to remember, you know, those clubs and those organisations who have done that.
There's a lot more going on as well, Danny, isn't there, in terms of that's the frontline stuff, but clubs putting together resources for stuff to do at home and keeping people active at home, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that goes against the, you know, the whole breadth of the game. So, you know, volunteer-driven clubs, staff-driven clubs, you know, we've got, again, Aberdeen, you know, very early on, got a lot of really positive praise on social media with regards to homework and, you know, a lot of their clips went viral. But there are other clubs like Monifieth, who, you know, are a grassroots club who are offering out homework sheets and content. You've got other clubs such as Drumchapel United who might just reach out and once in a while in a WhatsApp group or text messaging, just go out to parents and asking and encouraging their players to get out into the garden and kick a ball. There are so many examples, and I think I spoke to you before we started. You know, it's difficult for me even sitting here to say, you know, there are X amount of clubs and giving tangible examples when there are just so many that are probably doing it under the radar as well. Before we came on, you know, we had done a bit of an audit about the clubs who are delivering kind of community activity, and it was about 50 across Scotland, you know. But and if I then include the number of clubs who are then doing worksheets and content for players, it's well over 100. So, you know, if I'm sitting here giving out examples, I apologise to the clubs that I've missed, but I think that the way that the clubs are now offering remote services for their members, I think's brilliant. I've actually saw quite a lot of amateur teams now stepping up and, you know, this 5K challenge, and they're encouraging their players to get out and do runs and you know, it becomes a little bit competitive. But how useful is that going to be in the long run? You know, if that's something that can be done weekly, monthly, across the whole calendar season, it's just so, so important.
I was just going to say, how important are all these things going to be in the long run in terms of long-lasting connections with fans and the kind of members and their clubs?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things is that we've long advocated, and I think the clubs say the same, that they are just embedded within their communities. Now, what they're now doing is they're just using the power of the badge to motivate people maybe to come along and be involved with them. Or secondly, if they've got a workforce and they're able to kind of gather support, they're able to go back out and do it. You know, you look at clubs like Celtic, for example, who are investing a huge amount of money into food banks, and they've managed to get a huge amount of money to go back out the door. Clubs like Motherwell, for example, who, you know, are using the community trust and their brand to work in tandem. I think it's going to have a really, really positive effect in the long run. we've spoke to clubs and colleagues, and we think that when football does get restarted, I think it will be boom time for a lot of clubs and a lot of organisations, just simply because of the work that they've done. More people are going to be aware of them, and they're going to be talking really, really positively about them as well.
Danny, in terms of then going forward, obviously a lot of there's immediate demands on the clubs for survival, in some cases for just getting through this period, and with the uncertainty of when football's coming back, what would you say in terms of advice to clubs for the chance of putting stuff in, initiatives in place for longer term, bearing in mind obviously the short term need for revenue or whatever else it may be?
Yeah, I think the last 4 weeks, a lot of clubs have been, just like I think a lot of businesses, have been just finding their feet about where they want to try and get to. So, you know, some clubs have furloughed staff in terms of their community trust. Some, you know, some have decided that they're going to continue to do frontline work. I think that in the long term, I think that the steps and measures that they've taken, so either they're going to have a greater online presence, you know, I think that's really, really crucial. I think the fact that they've managed to reach out and find new ways of speaking to parents and players, I think it's going to have really long-lasting effect. And what I would say to any of the clubs that are listening in and considering what direction of travel to go into, I think they've just got to understand that, and I think I said in the previous podcast, you know, a club who've got 300 players, you know, they've potentially got reached about 1,500 people within the local community through grands and grandpas and aunts and uncles and everybody else in between. You know, and if you look at some of the senior clubs with their fan bases, you know, huge thousands of people, I think that we can't underestimate the impact they can have long term about just continuing on this thread. You know, I saw that the SPFL Trust, for example, have got a Trusted to Support campaign, and they're highlighting all the club's work. You know, I'd like to think that this is something that we could do long term, that we can just keep on talking about club stories and kind of sharing their impact. One of the other things as well is that, you know, we had just before the shutdown, we had released a value of football social return on investment report from Spartans Community Football Academy. And I was thinking to myself before I came on the podcast to chat to you, you know, like, I remember there's a credit card, bear with me here, by the way, there was a credit card advert, you know, a couple of years ago where they talked about paying for things, and there was a value to that. And then they talked about that experience being absolutely priceless. And I think that football clubs are at that stage. You know, we're able to talk about their social return on investment in terms of that real tangible pounds, shillings and pence. But the bit that they do in terms of their connection is going to be the priceless part. And, you know, how wonderful would it be if once we do get up and running again, that we're able to kind of galvanise all that goodwill. And, if, you know, the junior clubs who have done some amazing work, the amateur clubs, the Highland League, the Lowland League, you know, the women's teams, if they did all that work and were able to kind of showcase it collectively, I think that's just so powerful for Scottish football.
I think you're 100% right there. Danny, in terms of support from yourself and the Scottish FA, what's the sort of work you've been looking at?
So what we've tried to do is that there are obviously a number of really, really excellent organisations who are delivering podcasts and webinars, and there's a lot of online content. Our view very much is that, you know, we would like to be here and assist the clubs in the next 6 months, you know, the next year to try and work with them. So what we've been doing is just releasing some information primarily around about wellbeing. So on the Scottish FA website, there are wellbeing information for players, there's wellbeing information for clubs. You know, like there's been grassroots clubs like Dalkeith Thistle, for example, who have adopted the wellbeing pack and sent it out to their players and their wider community just to make people aware of this can be quite frightening. You know, it can be quite isolating, this, you know, this stage. Really, really important that they do that. I think over the coming weeks and months, we'll offer out more kind of bespoke podcasts just like this, where we'll maybe focus on different parts of the game, whether or not it is, you know, player development, or it's looking at wider community, or it's how to talk to your fans and engage them. You know, I know that we're not here to talk about it, but you know, the restructure and when the restart date gets agreed, we're going to use that as a timeline to start working towards with a lot of the clubs. So you know, we're really keen to hear their views and what they might want, and we work with our staff and our other partners then to try and create content for them as we move on.
And if clubs want to get in touch with yourself, Danny, for a bit of support or bounce some ideas about, or just tell you about some of their issues, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so they can do that either through Twitter. We've obviously got a regional team as well who are in place. Just reach out to the various email addresses for the regional accounts. You know, they can speak to them. If they have points of contact with the SPFL Trust, if they have other partners, you know, we'll work collectively, I think, to try and go and support clubs. So, you know, as I say, we'd be really interested to hear about what clubs are thinking are, you know, the immediate problems that they need to try and solve. But then I think really crucially for me, it's that restart and what does it look like in terms of football clubs who've maybe, you know, stopped their direct debit payments. You know, how do they restart that? How do they communicate to their parents to get them galvanised and back on side? How do they go through the, you know, they might sound mundane, but the booking process for them to get back onto the football pitches, strips, you know, speaking to their players, all of these things are just incredibly important. And I think for the clubs that have got staff, you know, what does that look like from their point of view? What's the priority list for them when they get restarted? Is it looking at, you know, that frontline services as we talked about and continuing those partnerships, or do they shift their focus to another part of their community as well, which they think they might have to galvanise? One of the things as well, which I think will be interesting, is the idea of more players and more fans and more people wanting to consume the game. You know, it's going to put pressure on clubs and about how they create pathways and how they create opportunities for people to be involved in their club. I really like, sorry for going on here, but I really like the idea of Livingston and Stenhouse Muir, for example, at, you know, where people have invested money into the club, but they're actually called shareholders, and it almost kind of galvanises that idea of the people who are investing into the club being, you know, part of that wider community. And I think that goes for grassroots as well. You know, everybody who spends money getting back into a football club is essentially somebody who's, you know, a member and is you know, is helping that club and that community.
Yeah, that's probably a nice segue for me to just bring through a few of the fundraising efforts that we've spotted across the club, or that I've spotted anyway. I think Stenny is a very good one, like you said, Danny. They have been kind of offering up the fans to get involved and buying, if you like, shares in the club and kind of with some benefits attached to that later down the line too, which I think has been a really great initiative, and that's been widely picked up by Stenny fans. And even I think some fans that were already involved in the club have kind of increased their shareholding, if you like, as well. So I think that's been a big positive there. I think one of the things from a couple of the Fife clubs, so Raith and Dunfermline, they've both raised incredible amounts of money through their fans just simply donating to the club, with kind of just giving links available for both sets of fans. I think Raith fans, when I checked this last night, they've raised over £50,000, while Dunfermline have just gone through the £40,000 mark as well. So incredible totals, and just shows you like the power of football and fans really wanting to come out and support their club. And both of those links are still live to donate today as well, and continuing on, I think. Raith are one of the clubs also live on a platform that's been created called Donate a Ticket. Now, I think I'm right in saying that fans can just go onto this platform and donate the value of a match day ticket that they might have paid anyway if that match had gone ahead in this time of obviously no matches. So clubs across all levels of the game have got on board with this and using it as a kind of another string to their fundraising efforts. So Raith have earned another £5,000 through this already, and Glasgow City have raised almost £2,000 through this, and there's tons of other clubs on there as well. There's a kind of leaderboard, which obviously it's not a time for competition, but it is good to see all the clubs on there and the amounts that they've raised so far. Danny, you mentioned Livy already as well. They've had over 200 fans contribute a very good amount of just over £6,000 to what they're calling the operating fund. And I think today as well, they've just launched their season ticket campaign for next season, whatever next season will look like at the moment. And yeah, there's so many other clubs doing so many fundraising efforts, the likes of online lotteries continuing, kind of 50-50 draws and even some auctions and raffles as well. So every little helps, as the saying goes in these times.
Yeah, I think that there's some great examples in that, and that's just a flavour of some of the things that are going on. And I think from my point of view, looking in, and obviously not working at a club, and the support from fans for their clubs has been unbelievable, and the response for some of those things that you've said is great. I mean, it'd be great. I think the initial reaction is, yep, need to get money in the door. Is what can clubs give fans back the way? And that's maybe something for some clubs to have a think about, is how do you reward fans that are giving their money? How do you create more sustainable models? I know myself and Danny, for example, have spoken over the last few weeks about how do clubs potentially create a sort of membership proposition that helps us go down a subscription model sort of way, and whether there's any feasibility in that. I think you look at clubs like Aberdeen, who have got their AberDNA, for example, is a great example of a club that has developed a very strong membership proposition, and obviously they're doing a lot of good work. And I think Aberdeen, across the board, have been very open and transparent in what they've been doing through the coronavirus, and doing initiatives like giving money back into community foundations for season ticket purchases, etc. So, no, look, there's a lot of good work of clubs fundraising wise going on. Obviously, I think a lot of clubs would rather they weren't having to do this, but it's been great to see Scottish football get together behind a lot of this and support their clubs.
And I'd also like to say as well, Michael, that, you know, just to echo that, I don't think you can underestimate, you know, we're obviously talking about the ones that we've saw in the press and or social media or, you know, has been highlighted, but I don't think that you can underestimate the power of the clubs then, you know, who've got maybe a group of players and are dropping text messages now and again into them, or there's a platform for them to be able to go and to get supported. You know, there's... I also think as well, you know, if you're a parent, for example, in these times, it can be a bit of a struggle to keep the children entertained and homeschooled and everything else that's going around about it. You know, there are clubs that are doing like education programmes online, you know, Motherwell Community Trust, Montrose, for example, who are doing things. You know, what I would probably just say to everybody, you know, in the clubs and, you know, the wider community, you know, if just go back out onto social media, see what's available. There are loads and loads of different examples. I saw Boroughmuir in the press at the weekend as well, because they've spent a lot of time and effort on their player development programme and try to give more and more content. You know, that's just as equally as important as, you know, a West Dyke who are doing an online viral, you know, football challenge, but they're also just making sure that they're keeping in contact with all the parents and players. You know, like everything, I think everyone counts at this stage. You know, it's so important.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And just on some of those things, in terms of, obviously we've touched on the fundraising, we've touched on the community aspect, but I was just going to wrap up this podcast by just giving some examples and talking about some of the things clubs have been doing from a content point of view. And Danny, you mentioned there a lot about homeschooling challenges, and I think we're seeing that it's quite prominent across a lot of clubs, and it's great. I mean, it's given such variety for people, and I know a lot of parents are having to homeschool children at the moment in time, and having that resources and doing something a bit different has been great. I think you mentioned Motherwell there. I think Dundee United have done some great stuff as well. Aberdeen, there's clubs all across the country providing additional resources, which is great. Some other interesting things just to call out. We've mentioned Aberdeen quite a lot on this already, but they've hosting a Q&A with Dave Cormack, who obviously Dave Cormack's been very open and vocal during this, but also Rob Wicks, our commercial director's on it. So inviting for fans to contribute questions, and they'll do a Q&A that we'll be able to watch. But that's happening at all levels of the game. I think Kilwinning Rangers did one with their chairman a couple of weeks ago. So I think it's good to see clubs being open and transparent, and getting... We're seeing chief execs and chairmen and various other people give statements of to where things are, and clubs being honest, which is great and refreshing. On the lighter side of things, we've got clubs, obviously, I think, nostalgia, and while it's no substitute for the live games, there's replaying old matches, so everybody's doing it. We're no different, but obviously it's good content and utilising archive that we didn't normally do. Like Celtic, for example, have done a fair bit. They've launched they're doing a lot of podcasting with players. The players are getting involved with player takeovers now. I know that's not possible across all levels of the game, depending on the furlough situation, but it's just an example of some things I've been doing. I know Motherwell have got Declan Gallagher, has been playing a lot of FIFA, so they've been trying to get some content out of that, which has been great. The likes of Kilmarnock, Dundee United have been doing World Cup of Kit votes, so just looking at their old kits, which has been quite cool. Clubs across the country, for example, have been doing support for the NHS, which is I think everybody can get behind. I mentioned Celtic had done a lot more podcasts. Berwick Rangers started their own podcast, which is great. Pennycook Athletic got behind the East Scottish Cup that we were running and did some quirky content with their virtual manager doing post-match interviews, etc., which I found quite entertaining. But again, it's just trying to think a bit different that can engage the fans. And obviously, I think the key thing is not doing content for the sake of it, but obviously being able to do something that can distract the fans, cheer them up, get them engaged. We talked, just jumping back to Motherwell, actually, just looking at a note I've got here. Richard Tate was doing some home workouts, and we're seeing that across the board as well, as players doing more physical activity and encouraging fans to get involved and clubs supporting that. So, look, there's a whole variety of different things, whether it's quizzes, whether it's esports and football, or whether it's just longer form content. I know Rangers, for example, the Rangers Academy and Dundee United, I've mentioned a few times, they're doing a lot of good academy stuff as well. But Rangers had academy webinars with parents with Craig Mulholland. None of this stuff's new. None of this stuff's revolutionary, but it's just good ways of keeping in touch with people and keeping them engaged and keeping people up to date as well, which I think's the communication part's very important. So yeah, look, just wanted to call out some examples. And Danny, as you keep saying, that there's so much going on that we could spend the next 2 hours just going through every club and what they're doing, and some, as you said, going under the radar that's not getting picked up. I think one example just to throw in the mix that's not from Scotland was Everton, and Everton we're doing kids' bedtime storytelling with players, which I just thought was a bit different and a bit quirky. But again, it's just bringing that idea of bringing everybody together and everybody chipping in to do their bit.
Yeah, it's connection. That's the big thing. You know, it's how the clubs connect to their communities. It's how they choose to do it. So I think you're right. You know, we're just talking about all the different bits of best practice that we've seen or things that we've seen, but however that those clubs decide to connect with their communities are really just a really, really important thing, and it's probably more realistic that they understand the needs of their community a little bit more. Just, you know, like as an aside, I was speaking to a club a couple of days ago, and they were talking about they normally offer out food bank provision, and they've decided not to go down that route because there are so many third sector and public sector bodies who, in that area, who are, you know, are really well versed, and they're able to go and do that. So what the club have now decided with their committee is that they'll take care of the school children's proms when they get back, you know, back to school, because they've missed out on that at the tail end of the year. So, you know, how, again, from a football club's perspective, not something they would have ever thought they would be in that space, but they've listened to their community and they're connected and they've decided that that's the route that they're going to go down. So it's just incredible, absolutely incredible. And as I've said right at the start, you know, we do have some of the best examples of community clubs in Scotland at all levels of the game, in Europe, sorry, in all levels of the game. And I think this is, you know, we're getting shown to the real positive light at the moment.
It's just continuing to shout about it as well, isn't it? So that even more fans get involved and even more fans can get connected to those clubs too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just understanding how, you know, I know I've talked about consumers, but it's just how people want to consume the game. They might not necessarily want to play, but they want to be involved in the club, or they want to contribute and they want to support the local club and their community. And it's just working out the best ways that you're able to you know, to facilitate that.
Yeah, look, I think one of the things, Michael, you mentioned a couple of them, but it's some of the things that you guys have been doing at the Scottish FA that obviously I've been getting involved in, and they've been brilliant. And I just wanted to kind of flag those a little bit further, just because they could be some things that the other clubs do as well, even more so, kind of getting involved for something that they can do themselves. Like the big Scottish football quiz was a big success from what I could see anyway. How did it go down for you on your side?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And believe it or not, we've not scripted this. We've not talked about this before. So this is, I didn't expect to be talking about this. No, look, we, when this all started, I just took a moment to figure out, right, what are we wanting to do as an association? Myself and Danny have had some very long chats about what we want to do and from a club point of view, but we're slightly different. We're not a club. We don't have weekly games, but we were missing out on, well, obviously we should have known that we had qualified for Euro 2020 by now. We should know who's in the Scottish Cup final by now. So there was a lot of stuff going there, and I think as a governing body, there was a lot of emphasis, or we felt we should be doing more to help communicate the message for the NHS and the government. But we're also wary, like all the clubs, that this would be a time that everybody's stuck indoors and possibly isolated, or feeling isolated from any ever. So how do we keep people entertained as well and engaged? So yeah, the quiz was one that I'd seen quite a lot of quizzes happening, varying degrees of success, or but what I wanted to do was, I didn't want to do something a bit half-arsed, to be honest. I wanted something that people would really buy into. I think I've talked about this before from a Scottish FA point of view, is I think people, when we do things like this, they're expecting it to be crap because it's the Scottish FA, or they never do it right. And I wanted to show that we are quite innovative and we can do something that can bring a lot of people together. We are in that fortunate position that Scotland, for the most part, everybody supports Scotland or has an affinity to the Scotland national team. So it was something that could be bring people together from a Scottish football point of view. And yeah, no, look, went well. Had over 4,000 people play, a lot more watching. And yeah, the feedback's been great, and we're delighted that we'll be able to do a second one on what should have been Scottish Cup final weekend. As I said, we've looked at different things. We've been doing a little bit of competitive gaming. So we've got an e-Scottish Cup that's coming to an end. We're just at the quarterfinal stage just now, and that's been an interesting test. And for me, a couple of these things have been testing the water with things, because it's been the perfect opportunity to do so. I mean, you're not going to get this. This is a hopefully just a once-in-a-lifetime sort of thing that's happening, but it's given us an opportunity to look at things like e-Scottish Cup, which we've talked about, and it's been sitting there for 12, 18 months, and being able to roll it out and seeing how it actually has worked and how it's gone down. And it's been some lessons from my end, but it seems to be going well. It's engaged with a different audience. We had John McGinn. We're recording this just the day after John represented Scotland in some FIFA 20 e-friendly cup, alongside Mark Marley, who's one of Scotland's best FIFA players. And again, it's another toe in the water for us from an esports point of view. And while we did all right, we didn't qualify or anything like that. And it's interesting for us to get into that space more find out what's working, what's not working, and how do we go big on it next time. So, yeah, no, look, it's what we're not trying to do content for the sake of content. We're trying to do stuff that gets different groups of people engaged, keeps people entertained, keeps them distracted a little bit from what's going on as well, but also where we can help support the likes of the NHS and the government with the messaging and really sort of keep people in love with Scottish football while there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, E-Scottish Cup as well, again, was something that I was getting involved in, and I thought it was brilliant, to be honest. I've never played Football Manager in that way before, but it's just something a little bit different in this time, like you say. And something that you didn't mention as well was that it was for charity as well. There's pushing Children First as part of that, again, a big charity, a really important charity in this time too. And I think, yeah, just more people, more eyes on them and more people getting involved in something a little bit different is a big positive in this time.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's quite interesting because Football Manager's never been used as a competitive gaming aspect on a grand scale of things. I'm not saying we've trailblazed, because I know clubs and what's going on would have happened anyway. But yeah, we were one of the first to roll out a Football Manager competition. Or what I've seen anyway on the school we're doing now. Obviously there's the EFL Cup happening, but yeah, look, it's great. I think you saw what Leighton Orient did with their quarantine FIFA tournament, raising money for charity, and I think it's great, and we're trying to play whatever small part we can as well.
I'm just raging that I'm now out of the E-Scottish Cup and I did not win the big Scottish football quiz either, but there we go.
Just for the record as well, Chris, for anybody who's listening, Chris was randomly picked in a ballot. It wasn't fixed. But yeah, no, look, and I think hopefully we get back to football sooner or later, but the way things are going, you just don't know. So we'll continue to try and do more in this space as well.
Definitely. Danny, anything else from you to wrap up just before we head off?
No, just grateful for the opportunity to hopefully shine a light on some of the clubs and just talk about all the incredible work that's currently taking place. So thanks again, guys.
Magic. Michael, we've got a few extra podcasts lined up over the next wee while, haven't we?
Yeah, look, we're speaking to a number of different guests to get some content out there, yeah, that will hopefully help support clubs at all levels, as always, varied from video and streaming and doing stuff in the current climate and beyond to some more social media. And yeah, we've got a list, some people we're still reaching out to, so yeah, keep your eyes peeled. We're going to try and get as much as we can done over the next few weeks.
Magic. Thanks very much for listening, everyone, and stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
Take care.